In fact, recession in my timeline is right on schedule for June, July of this year. Don't, you know, it's not written on a tablet from Mount Sinai. I'm just saying that, and I'm going to go through that in a second. That's the time frame when I see the reverse repo facility runs dry, when the banking crisis intensifies, when the real Fed funds rate, which has been positive around 2% for 12 months, always leads to recession. That's when the inverted yield curve, which is the most inverted for the most amount of time ever, is gonna be in effect. And there's some other factors too that all point me to the fact that this summer, late spring, early summer, will be a next liquidity crisis. Powell goes back into all those things I just mentioned, and if he does so, because he'll have no choice, guess what? There's a great chance. The odds are elevated, Andy, that we're going to see long-term interest rates rise, not fall.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Good, Andy. How are you?
Nice doing to meet well.
Thank you.
Nice
so much to be on your program.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for coming up on board. A few things I really want to talk about, and there's plenty of to talk about, but probably what I appreciate most about you is your perspective or your take on this tug of war, if you would, of deflation and inflation. I find that quite interesting because what you're hearing or what we're hearing most of in the mainstream media is we're in this inflationary cycle, which, yes, that's true. But if you're put a gun to my head and see where we're headed or even where we're at, I would say we're actually in a deflationary cycle. Give me your thoughts on all that and where we're at and where we're going in regards to inflation and deflation.
I mean, unfortunately, the first question you've asked me, I could expound on for about 3 hours. I'm going to try to truncate that as best I can. So let's just get some definitions in place first, Andy. Inflation, the way I think of inflation, is when the market loses confidence in a currency's purchasing power. And that's usually engendered from the fact that the central bank over-monetizes government debt and just prints a bunch of fiat currency. And that leads to this pervasive and protracted, intractable loss of confidence in a currency's purchasing power. That's inflation. Disinflation is when the second derivative of inflation is falling. And that's where I think we have been in for a while. So the government says we're growing at a 9% inflationary rate back in the summer and of 2 years ago, and then that disinflated all the way to 3%. That's where we are right now. Now we're actually in a period of stasis where we seem to be struggling to get that last mile of disinflation back to the Fed's asinine, as I love to say, asinine 2% target. Because why in the world would a central bank have a target for inflation that's anything but zero? Should be zero. That should be their responsibility. Let's link the money supply growth, the base money supply growth. Let's peg it towards GDP growth, which is population growth plus or labor force growth plus a productivity. And then if that paradigm is consistent, you will never have any hyperinflationary breakouts. You won't have any disinflationary or deflationary busts. It'll be mostly, for the most part, a period of calm and prosperity. So I agree with you that we could be heading for a period of deflation, which is absolute and nominal falling prices. So the rate of change of inflation would be negative, not just falling, not just rising at a slower rate. That would be engendered from, again, I believe, a deflationary depression or recession, which normally the outcome of that. And that comes from a liquidity crisis, and that's where I think we are eventually headed. The reason why we're not there right now is because the Fed's reverse repo facility had $2.5 trillion, which was just taking reserves and high-powered money out of the financial system, parking it at the Fed. Fed just leaves it there and pays interest on it. That money's been pouring out. $2 trillion have been pouring out over the last year or so. That is more than offset quantitative tightening. If I could just get into why I believe that's important. So I look at the Treasury General Account, reverse repo facility, bank lending standards, and I look at the base, the monetary base. When I do, these are what I look at when determining liquidity. And the reverse repo facility has offset quantitative tightening by the tune of about $500 billion this past year. So we actually have had quantitative easing in the past year. And that's why you say, you know, the stock market rallying, you see, you know, not only shitcoin or Bitcoin, as I like to call it, that's going through the roof. And again, I shouldn't have said that because now I have to explain. I actually like the idea of cryptocurrencies. I like the idea of getting away from the fiat currency system, but blockchains are unlimited. There's a limited number of cryptocurrencies. They are no longer a transaction that's anonymous or immutable or decentralized. Wall Street has co-opted and corrupted it. And that's why you see one unit trading at $70,000, a bunch of letters and numbers, electronic letters and numbers shouldn't be worth $70,000 a unit, a glorified QR code. But Bitcoin in its purest form, you know, a way to transact illicitly, anonymously over the internet, has a purpose, but isn't 70,000. I am so sorry for that long answer to that first question, and I'm going to shut up.
No, that's fine. No, that's fine. And there's a lot said there that I'm packing, and I really agree. You're speaking my love language, really. I would agree with you because it seems like all of this policy, if you would, it's like almost like they're pulling a lever here, pushing down a lever here, and they're working. One is inflationary, and a lever is inflationary, if you would, and then another lever is deflationary. I think there is a fly in the ointment, if you would, and that is really the banking problem. So last year, about this time, you had a regional banks were under a lot of pressure. Well, under pressure is underselling it. They were going belly up. There was a run on the banks, if you would. The Fed more or less bailed them out, or the Treasury bailed them out. That is starting to hit now. I had a guest on about 3 weeks ago, and the bank term funding program ended on the 11th of March. And his thesis was, well, Andy, I don't know what's going to happen. And yes, I don't know what's going to happen either. All I know is this is a crunch on liquidity now, and this is really negative on the banking sector, which would be negative on the overall U.S. economy. What are your thoughts now on that?
So I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Who are you saying that this person, some person said it was a liquidity squeeze? Who was that person?
His name is Bob Moriarty. He's the owner of 321 Gold.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I happen to be, I mean, I've been talking about this for a long time. March 11, 2023 was when those three banks went belly up, those regional banks, and they came with this bank term funding program, which was really acted like, I called it QE Lite, because, and the only reason why it was QE Lite is because it had an expiration date of a year. I mean, but it was QE. The Fed said, okay, you have this commercial mortgage-backed security, you have this mortgage-backed security, you have this corporate bond, you have this treasury that's way underwater. It's maybe 70 cents on the dollar. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come and I'll give you 100 cents on the dollar. I'll monetize that with base money supply, Fed credit. I'll give you that. You take that and you can make loans with that. You can buy stocks with that. You can buy bonds with that. You can do anything you want with that. You can convert that to cash if you want to, because base money supply, Fed credit can be converted into physical coins and currency at will by the banking system. So you do what you want to do that. I'll take your bad asset. I'll hold it on my balance sheet, but I'm going to hold it for a year and I'm going to charge you a little bit of interest. And hopefully by that time, inflation will plunge. I'll lower my interest rates to the point where the 10-year treasury that you bought at 0.5% will once again yield 0.5%. And then you won't have this hole in your balance sheet, and we'll start all over again. It'll be wonderful. Well, a funny thing happened on the way to that. Well, I'll give him a little bit of credit, other than be a sycophant for the banking system like every other central banker, other than Paul Volcker. I give him a little bit of credit that he actually ended on March 11th the bank term funding program. So now all those loans that were a year old are now returned. So you have to give the Fed 100 cents on the dollar plus interest, and you get your bonds back, regional banks. which, by the way, I will hasten to add, I think you just said it, is when their assets are now worse condition than they were when the Fed first took them off the bank's balance sheets. So that's a blow to liquidity, big blow to liquidity. But to Powell's credit, he did it. Let's see how long that lasts. I think he's going to have to go back into another round of QE, go back to ZIRP. I think he's going to have to shake hands with Janet Yellen and launch another iteration of helicopter money. All those things he's going to have to do on the next recession. Recessions haven't been banned. In fact, recession in my timeline is right on schedule for June, July of this year. It's not written on a tablet from Mount Sinai. I'm just saying that, and I'm going to go through that in a second. That's the time frame when I see the reverse repo facility runs dry, when the banking crisis intensifies, when the real Fed funds rate, which has been positive around 2% for 12 months,